Morning. During the year, mostly, the second reading is continuous from one of the books, the New Testament. The gospel continuous from whichever gospel is up that year. And then the first reading gets picked from here and there in the Tanakh to match one or another theme generally from the gospel. But these Lenten liturgies are different. They've always been composed for the occasion. Even back when there were only two readings, those two were chosen carefully for the particular Sundays of Lent and the particular Sundays of Easter. And when we had the great reform after Vatican II and expanded to a three-reading cycle, they were equally careful in selecting the first readings so that the first and second readings now go together quite well, usually during Lent. And the teaching, the catechumens. Lent, after all, is a time not only of preparation for Easter, but of preparation specifically for those who will be baptized and confirmed and received into the church at Easter. And the whole community joins them in this final stage of their preparation process. We have a candidate who will be enrolled this morning and sent off to the meeting at the cathedral this afternoon. Parishes all over the diocese will be doing that. The readings are chosen to help fit into that understanding. And so we start with Noah. Why do we start with Noah? Isn't that a little confusing? And we run the risk of sounds like we want our catechumens and candidates to believe that Noah was a character in history and that there was this great flood 5,000 years ago. Now, we've been at it longer than that with them. They understand more than that. They know that history begins with Abraham and Sarah, and before that we only have stories that are put together to teach truths. Well, what truths is the Noah story teaching? Other than everybody loves a good flood story. It seems like every culture has one. Well, the Jewish flood story is more about the covenant than it is about the flood. And the church surely makes that clear in the way the reading is selected. The whole story of the building of the ark is ignored. The rain for 40 days and 40 nights, we don't hear about that. The sending out of the dove, we don't hear about that. The reading is chosen from the very end. After it's all over, and God says, I will make this covenant with you and with all living things. What they're doing is looking back into their own imagined prehistory and projecting the covenant all the way back there. This is the most important thing we have. Is our covenant with God. And it must have somehow always been here. So there is a covenant with Abraham, even a covenant way back with Noah. And note that that covenant is universal. It's not like the covenant at Sinai for the daughters and sons of Abraham and Sarah. It's for you and all living things. Not just all human beings, but all living things, all creation is drawn into this covenant relationship with God. You shall be my people. You shall be my God. And Peter, in the second reading, says that this is prefigures baptism, that our baptismal covenant, when we are baptized into Jesus, and sharing Jesus' life, Jesus' death, and Jesus' covenant with God is a completion of that long spectrum of development of covenant theology. And this is what we're coming to. This is what we're giving you at Easter when you're baptized, when you're confirmed, when you're received into communion. You become a part very explicitly of this covenant people of God. So that's what the first two readings are doing. The second reading the gospel reading has always been about the temptations in the desert. Now, Matthew and Luke are almost the same on that point. So when we went from having repeating Matthew every year to Matthew one year and Luke another, that didn't make any very much difference. They both go into some considerable detail, telling us about the three temptations of Christ, and even reporting the dialogue between Jesus and the devil, which is interesting since there were no witnesses and no stenographers present. But it does spell out the kind of temptations that Jesus faced, and therefore the kind of temptations that we Christians face, and have Jesus model for us the kind of responses we should be making. All of which makes for a lot of easy preaching. And then we get Mark. He remained in the desert 40 days and was tempted by Satan. Period. Doesn't tell you anything more about it. First few times I had to preach this gospel, I wasn't quite sure what to do with it. How do you preach about the temptations of Jesus in the desert when there aren't any? Well, it doesn't say there aren't any. It says, in fact, that there were some. It just doesn't tell you what they were. The longer I've sat with that, it slowly began to unfold itself. There's a little bit of a koan-type meaning to that silence. I mean, the temptations spell out in Matthew and Luke some specific temptations for me to be on the lookout for. Not precisely, of course. I'm not particularly tempted to turn stones into bread. I probably would be if I could, but I can't, so that's not a big temptation for me. But it helps focus some thoughts. But here there's no point to the focus. And maybe that in itself is telling us something. That we just don't have a problem resisting temptation. We do, of course, but that's not the only problem. Or even the basic problem. Maybe the more fundamental problem is we have a problem recognizing temptation. The God who is calling us to this covenant is waiting. See the big sign? God is waiting for us to respond in faithfulness to this covenant. And there are all kinds of temptations for us to do something else. Recognizing them may be the hardest part. Remember, I don't know, 30 years ago or more, there was this big sensation over the film, The Last Temptation of Christ. And all the churches encouraged you not to go to see it because it depicted Jesus having this torrid affair with Mary Magdalene, and it was just totally unseemly, and you shouldn't, you know, encourage such pornography and such insult to religion. Well, they missed the boat entirely. If you actually went and saw the movie, and if you didn't, you can always rent it now. The temptation is not sexual. It's not that Mary Magdalene is particularly that voluptuous, you know, and there's no depiction of a torrid affair. The temptation is ordinariness. Jesus is hanging on a cross, dying a rather excruciating death, doing this Messiah thing. And the temptation is to think, why? You know? Couldn't I just been ordinary? Couldn't I have done whatever every other kid in Nazareth did, go into the family business? But Dad taught me carpentry pretty well. Couldn't I just been a carpenter, married a nice girl, raised a couple of kids, had a nice ordinary life in Nazareth? Couldn't I somehow go back and do that maybe? Maybe I've chosen the wrong path here. That was the last temptation. The temptation to sneak out of his role as Messiah and just be ordinary. Well, that's probably a temptation for us. Not much of one most of the time, because I'm so ordinary it hurts. probably so are you. There isn't a whole lot we can do about that. But you're not completely ordinary. We're not all run out of a cookie cutter. You have some unique talents. You have some unique relationships. You have some unique positions, just where you happen to be in space and time, that enables you to do things for the kingdom that nobody else can do. We'd just as soon not do that. We'd just as soon pass it by, the ordinary. Treat it the way I treat temptation to exercise. Ignore it long enough, it'll go away. We dodge the call. Recognizing the calls that we dodge, probably a bigger feat than resisting the temptations that we recognize. I mean, we all face real out there temptations. Might as well have a big old, red-faced, horned, tailed Satan in front of us. We're tempted by anger. We're tempted by avarice. We're tempted by lust. We're tempted by all kinds of things. But we know about those, and we can fight them. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, but at least we know about them. Maybe the biggest temptations are the ones we don't recognize, and the ones that are more negative than positive. Somebody tries to lure you into an inappropriate relationship. You know that's a temptation. But how about developing an appropriate relationship? How about the little bit of extra effort that you could put in with your spouse or your parents or your kids or some coworker or some neighbor or whatever? Not doing that is an easier temptation to miss than the temptation to run off and have some torrid affair on a desert island. God is waiting. God is calling us to faithfulness. God is calling us to participation in this covenant relation that God makes with us and with all living things. What we have to do is answer. And that means perhaps dealing with that kind of ambiguity, dealing with that kind of recognition problem, learning to know a temptation when we see one, and then to deal with it. So maybe Mark has a little something to tell us, and the fact that he doesn't tell us anything. He was in the desert 40 days and was tempted by Satan. He maybe had to figure out where and how and what those temptations were. Maybe so do we. God is waiting. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.